Of all the tools in my toolbox, whether that's coaching skills or somatic work like yoga, meditation or breath work, out of all of those skills, if there's one skill that I would love for you to take and start using in your life today, that skill is radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is something that is good not just in general for us, but also for dealing with grief, dealing with trauma. And it's a really powerful tool, one that I got introduced to a couple of years ago. And although I hate the phrase, it really did change everything for me. So let's dive into radical acceptance. You're listening to Feather Mane Soul Wisdom, a podcast for those looking to rediscover their wild spirit in spite of life's challenges. If you're living with a chronic illness or neurodivergent or consider yourself disabled, and you're looking to connect with your own inner untamed essence, then this show is for you. Your host is Kit Kelsto, Wild Spirit Storyteller. Thanks for listening, and now on to the episode. Hello and welcome to this episode of the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Show on the Muse Charmer Radio Network. I'm your host, Kit Kelsto, Wild Spirit Storyteller, and today we are going to dive into radical acceptance. I want to start by talking about what radical acceptance is and also what it is not, because I think when somebody who maybe has experienced some toxic positivity or spiritual bypassing hears the phrase radical acceptance, they immediately get prickly around that because they think that radical acceptance means accepting everything, and it does not. Radical acceptance is a psychological skill that means completely and totally accepting reality as it is right now without fighting, resisting, or judging. That doesn't mean liking it. That doesn't mean rolling over and not doing anything about it. What that means is going, hey, it is what it is. Here's what it is. And then you can determine what steps you do or don't want to take. To break it down a little bit, when we call radical acceptance radical, it means that you're accepting the facts with your whole mind, body, and spirit, and you're not judging. You're not fighting the truth. If you're dealing with financial situations, if your job sucks, you're not fighting that. You're accepting that, hey, my job sucks. That acceptance is a full sentence. I want to find a new job is not going to negate the fact that your job sucks, but it is a step you can take to improve your situation. And also, it's radical because it drops the word should. Too often, especially those of us who are neurodivergent or dealt with trauma, think that we should deal with stuff better. We don't have it as bad as somebody else. We should be okay. We should be able to cope. Radical acceptance means dropping the should or asking why me and simply says, hey, this is what I'm going through right now and accepting it. And if you're somebody who has spent a large part of your life kind of shoving down what you're going through, kind of putting on a smile and, you know, keep calm and carry on, that sort of mentality, then it can seem really radical to stop doing that and simply accepting radically where your life is. And again, I want to stress, it's not approval. You don't have to like, agree with, or condone what happened. You don't have to give up. You don't have to say, you know, my job sucks. There's nothing I can do about it. And it's not a weakness to actually face the truth of what is going on in our lives. I think too often we aren't willing to face the truth. And usually that is because of other people's expectations. They tell us that, you know, other people have it worse. It's the old, if you're a Gen Xer, you probably were told to clean your plate because there were starving children in Africa. The fact that you did or did not clean your plate has absolutely nothing to do with anybody else's hunger situation. And trying to get you to be grateful for something when maybe you didn't like the food, maybe you had sensory issues around the food, you know, that's not radical acceptance. Radical acceptance is, you know what, I really don't like what's for dinner and I don't feel like eating it and cleaning my plate. It does reduce suffering. Pain is a natural part of life. Buddhism tells us that attachment leads to suffering. Fighting that reality makes the pain worse. Clinging to those attachments makes the pain worse. It actually saves energy. When you stop fighting what's staring you in the face, you free up mental energy, which is at a premium for all of us right now. And it helps you move forward. You can't change or fix a situation until you truly understand the truth of how it exists right now. You can maybe make some moves in that direction, but until you really look at what's weighing on you or what you're dealing with, it's going to be hard to make the kind of profound, impactful changes that will really change everything. Radical acceptance was first developed during a type of therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy. And the gist of that is that it helps you hold two things in your mind that are complete opposites at the same time. And I think the important part of radical acceptance is understanding that the reality of your situation does not have anything to do with you personally. So a good example might be, my job sucks. I am still a good person. I still have worth. I deserve a job that doesn't suck. That's the dialectical part. It is accepting the reality of the situation and also radically accepting yourself and caring for yourself and loving yourself in spite of whatever you are dealing with. What does that mean for us? And by us, I want to speak to my neurodivergent community, my chronically ill and disabled community, my queer communities. What does radical acceptance mean for us? It really means that we need to dive into our stories. Anytime we hear the word should come up in our thoughts, that should be a flashing neon light that tells us that there's a story that we need to deconstruct. We need to understand a little bit more about it. What it also means is that radical acceptance often means dropping what we were told about ourselves from other people. And a good example is the common phrase, I did a podcast on this not too long ago, of being too much. You're too much. You're too emotional. You're too sensitive. You're too whatever. That is something that is told to my neurodivergent community. I've heard it myself. And what you do with that is, with the radical acceptance, you say the truth is, this person thinks I'm too much. However, I still have worth as a person. I unconditionally love myself. And when you give yourself that radical acceptance and you see the truth in that way, you can then look at it and say, this person says I am too much. That is that person's belief. That person apparently can't handle, doesn't want to deal with. We may not even know the answer to that. But the onus on fixing our behavior would be on that person. As long as we are doing our best and we're trying to communicate our needs, we're trying to be kind, we're trying to deal with overwhelming situations the best we can, then if somebody says something like that, radical acceptance means that we do not use that as yet another pain point for us, but we understand that we unconditionally love and accept ourselves. And in fact, there's an author, I'll link to her in the show notes, who wrote a book on this, Tara Barak, who wrote a book on radical acceptance, as well as other books related to that subject. And I highly recommend that work. I highly recommend that person's work. It's really helped me change how I look at things. When we look at radical acceptance for grief, the truth is it could be very difficult to do this. Because on one hand, acknowledging the unchangeable reality that if your grief is due to a loss, that the person, that the pet, that the situation or the job is gone and not coming back, can help you find realization, can help you see that truth and move forward on how to reshape your life with that loss or as part of that loss. Other people may find that accepting that permanence is too raw in the moment. And if that happens to you, that is okay. Grief is very much a non-linear road. It is very much a being in the moment, riding the waves of grief as they come. What it will do, though, is radical acceptance could mean letting go of control and allowing the heavy emotions of grief to move through your mind. And so that means when one of those grief waves hits you, instead of being like, oh God, I can't cry right now. I can't, you know, I got too much to do. I can't get emotional. Saying, hey, my grief is hitting me hard right now. That is okay. I unconditionally love and accept myself, which is the phrase that Tara Barak suggests in her work. And then letting that emotion, if you can, giving space for that emotion, for that grief wave to roll through you. And what a lot of people with grief find is when you give grief that space, that it actually rolls through relatively quickly. In other words, that when you actually allow yourself that time to grieve, you release rather than if you try to hang on to it and shove it down. A lot of times that initial letting go really allows things to flow. Fighting the reality of grief, and I just, you know, last week's show talked about the different types of grief, and this would be like the grief of not doing enough, the grief of the life of what if. Even with those types of grief, practicing radical acceptance tends to stop your secondary suffering, because fighting reality adds anger, it adds shock, it really prolongs your despair because you're not accepting the loss that happened. And it really kind of allows that grief to just linger in a very painful way. Now, I want to be clear. When it comes to grief, practicing radical acceptance does not mean making that grief go completely away. It does not mean that, ta-da, you're healed and everything's going to be just all fine. What that means is that you are willing to companion your grief, that you are willing to make space for your grief in your life and learn how to move forward with it. With all of that being said, I want to pivot to talking about radical acceptance and the wild and how having radical acceptance can help us really connect with our wild spirit and with the world around us. This can be difficult to think about or to put in terms that we can understand without actually centering the human experience. We don't understand a lot about how our animals move through the world, how they think about the world. We are even now uncovering some pretty amazing things about animal senses, including senses that we don't really utilize except in very specific cases, like echolocation, like checking and feeling electrical impulses, or even various ways of adapting the sense of touch or the speed of processing of those senses. There's a lot that happens in the animal world that we just really struggle to comprehend because it's not within our own experience. When we think about that and we think about radical acceptance, the question that readily comes to my mind, at least, is how do we know that animals practice radical acceptance? And if we think about, for example, a feral cat, since I work with a lot of cat nonprofits and we have our own sanctuary here, when you have a cat that is used to being outdoors and you trap the cat, or if you trap a raccoon or another animal to relocate it, that animal quite often will fight the trap. They'll realize that they are in danger. They realize that they are confined and they will try to get out. Once the animal is put into a new environment, for example, you bring the cat inside, put it in a crate, get it fixed, get it socialized. Even then, depending on the animal's individual personality, that animal may take months or years or never warm up to humans, depending on a variety of different factors. You could look at that and you could say that that animal is not practicing radical acceptance because it's not interacting with you. It's fighting to get out of the cage. But one of the things that I have noticed is that at some point, the animal will not necessarily accept its fate, but will at least settle to it. Now, at this point, you have to be very careful. An animal may shut down. An animal may become closed off. You need to keep those lines of communication open. And in the case of one very special but very difficult cat that we brought in during a very extreme cold snap, it took him 8 months to basically become a little love bug. And now, you know, he still is very timid. For example, he wants attention from me, but not from my spouse, whom he hasn't seen as much because he's in my office where I spend a large part of my day. He, you know, is still not going to be the same as a lap cat that was adopted as a kitten and brought into the house and given everything, you know, love, food, attention. But there is definite willingness to deal with the situation, to gain what he can out of the situation, and to find enrichment and comfort in that situation. I say this not to imply that every animal accepts every situation, but that animals learn to adapt. They focus on where they are here and now. They may not like it. They may not appreciate it. And obviously, I can't stress enough that it is our role as caretakers, as advocates, to ensure that these animals' lives are as positive and as enriched as possible. We can't just accept the fact that a cat will eventually not fight a cage or a crate while it's going through a vetting or taming process as the fact that the cat is okay there for the rest of their lives, because that's not the case at all. This is a temporary situation designed for the health and safety of the cat and the caretakers. And as soon as possible, the cat should be transitioned to a much more freedom encouraging environment, such as an adopted house, a foster situation, etc. That type of radical acceptance allows us to really look at where we are in the here and now. I would also add to that, now we don't know the actual thought processes that an animal goes through, but my guess is that when you look at the Buddhist principle that attachment leads to suffering and desire leads to suffering, that animals, while they work to fulfill their basic biological needs and their social emotional needs, I don't think they dwell on situations the way we humans do when those needs are not met. For example, during a drought, during a harsh weather conditions, maybe it's a thunderstorm, maybe it's a, you know, a hurricane or a storm where they kind of have to hunker down and not go out. When you think about that, my guess is the bird, for example, the seabird, that is, you know, that is hunkered down riding out a hurricane, isn't sitting on its nest going, oh my God, I wish this was over. I got stuff to do. I got food to eat. I've got to, you know, look for more twigs for my nest. Those thoughts feel very human and very much disconnected from the wild. And so to me, having radical acceptance connect us to the wild really focuses on living in the now, nurturing our social, emotional, physical, spiritual needs when and where possible, and obviously working to change those situations that are within our power to change. But I really don't think that rumination or dwelling on things is a facet of the wild or what nature does. Nature simply is. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, and our job as beings is to get through that and help others the best as possible. Radical acceptance for me has started to help me be more in tune with the rhythms and cycles of life, of nature, of the seasons, of my own body, of the way my mind works. It's helped me to be less anxious. It has helped me to really be more focused in the moment. And I feel like those two things, less anxious and more focused in the moment, they very much could be seen as prescriptions. And we all know how I don't like to prescribe things. But I feel like that's the benefit of connecting with the wild and connecting with radical acceptance. If you would like to learn how to incorporate more connections with the wild and with radical acceptance in your life, I encourage you to reach out at feathermanesoul.com, book a free call, let's chat, see how I can help you. And I also encourage you, especially if you like what you're hearing on this podcast, to like, subscribe, follow, share it with your friends, all of that good stuff. And if you can, wherever you're hearing this podcast, drop a 5-star review, just a few words, letting others know that you find this podcast to be valuable to you, because that's really going to help others find this important information as well. Thank you so much, and the wild in me sees the wild in you. You've been listening to the Feather Mane Soul Wisdom Podcast, hosted by Kit Kelstow. Learn more about Feather Mane Soul at feathermanesoul.com. As a wild spirit storyteller, Kit is passionate about helping those who are neurodivergent, disabled, or living with chronic illness rediscover their own inner wild spirit. Visit feathermanesoul.com to receive free gifts, or book a free call with Kit to discuss how Wild Spirit Storytelling can help you. Music is Running with the Horses by Purple Planet Music. This podcast is hosted on the Muse Charmer Media Network. Find out more by visiting feathermanesoul.com/show and following the links to the Muse Charmer Network. Please don't forget to like, subscribe, or follow wherever you're hearing my voice, or tell a friend who may be interested. Thank you.